Welcome back to The Source on KSTX 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. There's a lot of talk these days about income inequality in the United States, and that is important, but let's broaden the view. Let's, you know, bring the scope out. Look at the entire planet, income inequality across the globe. Understanding global inequality is now more important than ever because of globalization. And this is a movement that moves trades and services across the borders, lifting up, you know, is this effort, is this phenomenon, is it lifting up the very poor or not? You know, what are the forces behind global income distribution? How connected are they to regional destabilization, war, mass migration? We're joined by Branko Milanović. He is an economist and senior scholar at the Luxembourg Income Studies Center, and his new book is Global Inequality, A New Approach for the Age of Globalization. And we invite you into our conversation. Give us a call. Got a question or a comment. Number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can also email questions and comments to The Source at tpr.org. And Professor Milanović, welcome to The Source.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
And when we talk about global inequality, what are we, that sounds, it excites me and scares me at the same time to think about this, because we're thinking about the entire planet. And we're thinking about ways that wealth moves around. How do we think about that? How do you wrap your arms around that?
Well, you know, first of all, I mean, it's not that scary as it seems, but you have to have the data for that. And when we talk about global inequality, we really basically talk about total distribution of income in the world. Now, you get to that, actually, in terms of data, but having household surveys, which are representative surveys of income and consumption of the households of different countries, you have it for like 120, 130 countries in the world, covering something between 92 and 95% of the global population. And then basically you calculate all the statistics based on that. So it is a huge empirical endeavor, but it's doable. You know, we have now that kind of data from actually most of the countries in the world, and obviously I've done it, and you know, a couple of other people have done it too. So we know it now for the first time maybe in history.
But being poor in one part of the world is very different than being poor in another part of the world. Being poor in Baltimore versus being poor in Cairo, very different.
It's very different. Of course, the way that we adjust for that is that once you take incomes, you know, you convert them. Let's suppose you take, you know, Cairo. You take British pounds, Egyptian pounds. You convert them into the what is called international dollar, or so-called PPP dollar, which means purchasing power parity, which means that it's a dollar which has in principle the same purchasing power anywhere in the world. So in other words, what you are saying is that actually you take Egyptian incomes and say they are one-third, and say that the price level in Egypt is one-third of the U.S. price level, then you multiply all incomes in Egypt by a factor of three.
So the information that we get from Hanoi to Honduras to Cairo to Serbia, it's all, you can compare.
Yeah, you can compare it, because you need to have also, as I said, you know, the price level. So clearly, as you said before, you know, if I have $1 in Honduran currency, it's going to actually buy me more food there than if I have that in New York. So I have to adjust, like, I mean, by factor, multiply the income in Honduras in order to get to actually comparable, what would be the comparable income in the U.S. that would buy you as many things as in Honduras.
So why do you care about income inequality, and why should I care about it?
Well, it's a good question, because, you know, when you ask a question, what is income inequality in the U.S., people care because essentially you have a government, and if you're unhappy with income distribution and if you think some people have too much and others have too little, technically you have the right to vote and you can actually vote a different policy. Now, at the world level, we don't have the world government. But we do actually have some reasons maybe to care. One is a general reason that we might want to know how, you know, well we are doing compared to other people. For example, if I tell you that 12% of richest Americans are part of the global top 1%, it's something which is valuable to know. And, for example, nobody from African countries is in the top 1%. So you notice the huge differences between the countries. And then, you know, maybe more practically, one of the reasons why you might want to care is because migration is generally responding to these large differences in income.
So we don't have a global government that can set a create a set of rules for dealing with income distribution across the globe, but we do have market forces which work pretty universally, depending on where you are. You know how suppressed those market forces are, but also people, like you said, they can vote with their feet, and they do, and they can migrate legally or illegally. Refugees, or whether they're allowed to board a plane and come in here, or they can also, we can see gross destabilization and riots and warfare.
Absolutely. You know, let me just go back on these points. For example, citizens obviously vote. They have a vote. They can elect this government, that government, technically can change, you know, tax policy. But migration is the other way that actually citizens of the world vote, as it were, because they come to the countries where they are better off. Let me give you another example, which has been used quite a lot recently. Is it's only because we have global income distribution that we can compare, for example, how well have done the middle classes and the top of the income distribution in Asian countries, and how actually in percentage terms was very modest increase in real incomes experienced by the working class, or let's suppose middle class, in rich countries, including the U.S. So that, I think, is also a very interesting fact, and it has many implications. Why has it happened? Is globalization to blame? Is trade? Is offshoring? So once we know this fact, then we can actually go and try to look at the causality.
So we are in this age of globalization, and it's accelerating, it seems to be, as new agreements are crafted and proposed. How is there a direct connection between globalization, the dropping of tariffs, free trade, and shifts in income distribution across the planet?
No, this is, of course, a very difficult question. You know, the economists have been sort of debating that with respect, for example, to U.S. and China for like 20 years. It's very difficult to say if that is globalization alone that is responsible, for example, for, you know, stagnation of middle-class incomes in the U.S. It is globalization plus technological change, which often actually helped, better skilled, more educated people. And it's also types of policies that were adopted. So I think all three of them, and I often use this acronym of TOP, T standing for technology, O for openness or globalization, and P for policy. And it's really very difficult to say, you know, globalization is one-third of the, you know, cause, or it's actually one-half, but certainly all three of them played a role.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're talking about global inequality of wealth and what's happening around the world. We're talking about the book Global Inequality, A New Approach for the Age of Globalization, why this matters as we talk about mass migration around the world, trying to find forces of destabilization and neutralize them. And we're moving forward. So call in if you've got a question or a comment. And this is The Source on KSTX 89.1 FM. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Across the globe, we're living in an age of income inequality. The super rich are awash in excess. The poor are desperately poor. What are the dynamics that drive this inequality? Do they lead to destabilization, war, and mass migration? We're talking with Branko Milanović. He is the author. He's an economist and author of the book Global Inequality, A New Approach for the Age of Globalization. So, Professor Milanović, are the poor across the world that you've looked at through the data, are they doing better off now than they were 25 years ago?
Yes, I think there is no doubt about that. You know, the number of people, and of course the percentage of people who are poor now, and we of course use a very low line. So it's basically everybody who has an income, depending on the year, but it's above $1 a day, or actually nowadays that line is $1.9 a day. So it's really very, very modest line. But the number of people that were below that line was like almost 2 billion, and it's now been reduced to a little bit over a billion. And so the most of the change up to year 2000 came from the reduction in poverty in China, but more recently other countries like India have actually made big strides in reduction of this really extreme poverty.
Right, these are the BRIC countries, and Brazil was one of the BRIC countries, and now there's no longer, we don't talk about BRIC countries anymore like we did like a few years ago, but obviously in Brazil we're seeing almost a coup or a revolution as their incomes drop severely. We've heard about corruption in the government and a lot of turmoil there, and is that something that can be linked to the inequality?
Well, not really directly, because actually it's a very interesting thing that you asked me about Brazil, because Brazil is one of the very few countries, there are only about maybe a dozen countries that in the last 20 years have seen a decline in income inequality. Now, that's not going to say that Brazil's income inequality is not very high. So one has to distinguish the fact that income inequality in Brazil is still very, very high, but, you know, 20 years or 15 years ago, it was even higher. So Brazil actually has seen an improvement in income inequality thanks to a higher minimum wage and more educated population and, of course, large, you know, social program. Now, what happened is really more political. It is the issue of corruption and, you know, change in terms of trade, decline in the prices of raw materials. And now we will see what will happen now with the new government and whether the you know, improvements in poverty reduction that Brazil has seen, whether they will be maintained or not.
Or whether or not outside forces were responsible for the drops in income. Like drought.
Well, I think for many, yes, actually, for many countries, I mean, if you look at Brazil, you know, it was the decline in prices of raw materials, then there was, you know, the epidemics, the Zika epidemics, and, you know, there are many drought, there are many other elements there, but Brazil, as I said, you know, paradoxically has been one of the poster, you know, children, if you will, poster child of a successful reduction of inequality. And poverty as well.
So we're taking the long view to look at the entire planet, and let's take the long view of looking at humanity. How has inequality and poverty, dire poverty, existed? I know you have data that goes back to the Middle Ages.
Yes, of course, not for the entire world, actually.
Sure, of course not. But
the data, yeah.
But looking at, you know, from what you know, you know, how I'm fascinated by the Middle Ages. So how better off or worse off are we than back then?
Oh, we are on average, I mean, obviously, I mean, incomparably better off. We're talking, you know, in the Middle Ages and even before, if you go to the Roman times, we're talking about, you know, countries and places where the average income was twice the subsistence. Now, to give you an idea what it means is that today the sort of a minimal income in the U.S., which exists, is probably somewhere about, you know, let's say 10 times or 8 times the subsistence. So in other words, even the poorest people in the U.S. are significantly better off than almost, you know, maybe 70 or 80% of population in the Middle Ages or in ancient Rome. So there is a, you know, huge improvement. But obviously, we are not comparing ourselves with Middle Ages. We are not comparing ourselves with Rome. It has been, after all, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 years ago. We compare ourselves with other countries today.
So, yes, but as we craft policy in the United States, looking at issues of free trade, and that's a hot issue right now, and it would be interesting to know, it would be good to put this into the argument that you know, if... By having globalization, is it a, when we're right, and you said that we're seeing people at the bottom, very bottom, being lifted up some, a few, less poverty at the very bottom, is that a, is that being taken from the middle class of America, or is that the creation of new wealth? Is it the transfer of wealth or the creation of wealth?
No, it is always a creation of wealth. There is no transfer in a literal sense. Nobody has come to, you know, Texas or the U.S. and taken, you know, hundreds of dollars from the Americans and giving them to Chinese. It is creation of new wealth. The question is actually whether the same, you know, jobs can be done more efficiently at low costs in Asian countries, whether there is this competition which is, you know, whether it is fair or not fair, whether there actually there are some, impediments that can be put in, you know, to stop that competition, or whether you might believe that actually there are certain advantages which may be considered unfair, let's suppose the labor laws which are less respected in China or Burma than in the U.S. So there are these issues, but it's certainly not a zero-sum game. Nobody has come and taken money from people here and given them to, you know, people in China.
But people still compare their situation now to one that they may think exists elsewhere in the world, and they do migrate. And is migration, mass migration, increasing? It is an issue. Is it a product of global inequality?
Well, you know, just let me give you some numbers. You know, currently in the world, there is something about a little bit below 4% of people who live in the countries where they were not born. Now, that percentage in the U.S. is around 18 or, you know, maybe even 20%. So it's actually much higher in the U.S. than in many other countries. However, there are quite a few European countries where that percentage is between 15 and 20%. So, you know, this is not a phenomenon which is any longer limited only to the traditional, you know, accepting countries like U.S., Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and so on. It has now spread to Western Europe as well, mostly immigration from Africa, then within the European Union, and also from Latin America, particularly for Spain. So these are the facts. And these numbers are increasing. If you look at the numbers, they're not dramatically increasing, but clearly the willingness of the, you know, local populations to accept further migration is kind of being reduced. And it's, I think, very obvious in the case of Europe.
And do you see migration as a, is it accelerating? Has it stabilized? Or is it a solution for global income, wealth inequality?
Well, it has actually accelerated recently in the last 10 years. I do see it as a big contributor to reduction in global poverty and global inequality. And we have studies for that that show that actually migration is probably the most potent force for the reduction of global poverty. Now, the problem, however, is that we cannot speak of migration in a vacuum because people are not fully interchangeable. In other words, it does have certain political implications. Because in some segments of the labor force, you know, large number of immigrants or large immigration can actually reduce wages. And also there are other issues of absorption, cultural issues. We are very much aware of these cultural issues now with large Muslim population migrating into Europe. So there are really issues that cannot be totally disregarded. But now it has to be said that it's actually an extremely important force for the reduction in global poverty and inequality.
So I know, Professor Milanovic, you're an economist and you're not a prognosticator of a prophet, but are y'all looking at possible forces in the future that could disrupt, the distribution of wealth in the future? We're talking about drought, we're talking about global change, talking about ocean rising, and even to the explosion of automation.
Well, yes, they're all actually forces that can have significant impacts. You know, we don't know. It's very difficult, of course, to tell about the future clearly. Is that you might have climate change, which actually is a very important force, and we know that it would affect generally more poorer countries because it's actually particularly bad for the countries which are in the tropical area, and that might lead actually to increased migration as well. You can have, for example, if you have large problem with droughts in Africa, that would certainly even accelerate the process of migration into Europe. So I think the European situation is pretty dramatic because the gaps in income between Europe and Africa are very large, and the physical distance is very small. Actually, the Mediterranean Sea is practically a larger lake that actually can be easily traversed. So, yes, I think there are many other possibilities which actually might affect migration and, of course, global poverty and global inequality negatively. But, there are also good forces. The world is also improving. You have actually very high rates of growth still in Asia. So we should not be totally pessimistic.
Well, I really enjoyed talking with you because I think this is an important exercise to think about incomes and poverty and the quality of life for people outside of our borders, outside of our zone, and getting to think about what's it like around the world. So so I appreciate that. So Branko Milanović, thank you so much. The book is Global Inequality, A New Approach for the Age of Globalization. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, David. It was a pleasure.
And this is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for listening in.